Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hello and welcome to season 4 of Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast with me, Caroline Forn. I am so happy to be joined now via Zoom, which is very fancy and high tech and surely something will go wrong knowing me, by fellow podcaster and best-selling author living and working in the UK, Chloe Brotheridge. Chloe, thank you so much for joining me. You're so welcome to Owning It.
Thank you so much. I'm really looking forward to chatting to you.
And thank you so much for having me on your podcast not so long ago as well, which was just before things went absolutely bananas. So for anyone who's unfamiliar, I just want to get this right at the beginning. Your podcast is called The Calmer You Podcast.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
And your book is called The Anxiety Solution.
Exactly. Yes. That's the one.
I'm in the middle of putting together an article where I asked different therapists and counsellors and psychologists to recommend their sort of must-read anxiety books, who they recommend to clients, and your book came up so often, so I thought that would be nice for you to know, so it'll be included in there as well. And they also recommended mine. I'm like, okay, well, I you don't need to do that, recommend myself to myself, but thank you. While we're recording this, we're doing it a little bit in advance, we are still very much probably at the beginning of the pandemic experience. We're all stuck at home, we're trying to be safe. It's definitely having an impact on people's anxiety, and while I hope that by the time I publish this we've come out the other side, I did want to start by, I was kind of interested in asking you, what has your experience of this pandemic so far taught you about your anxiety? Because I feel like I'm learning an awful lot.
Yeah, a lot of people have been asking me if I've been feeling anxious about what's been going on, and I have to say I'm surprised that I actually hasn't. Yeah. I think definitely in the past it would have been something that would make me anxious. But I think, you know, I still experience anxiety at times, but it's more likely to be day-to-day stuff, to be honest, rather than, I think I'm one of those people where, and I've heard this from other people with anxiety, if there's a real big thing going on, I can actually cope with that. And it's the littler things that seem to be more of a struggle. So on a personal level, I feel quite okay. We'll see how it goes. I was talking to someone recently who says you kind of got to be a bit careful if you're one of those people who holds it all together and then eventually kind of falls apart, and I hope that won't happen. Yeah. But so far I've been all right. I think it is teaching me about letting go of what I can't control. I'm definitely someone that likes to be in control, and there's a lot about this situation that is outside of our control, and it's a nice feeling, I think, to be able to let go of that. And it's not always possible, but I found that so far I'm just taking it day by day and recognizing that I can't control it. So I'm just trying to make the best of the situation and trying to be there for other people as much as possible as well.
And do you think it's possible that you've, like myself, have done so much work on understanding your anxiety and learning how to manage it and to cope with it, that this is in a way a really good test to see how you've been doing, because maybe the reason that you're coping is because of all the work that you've done, and because you understand it so much better now, and because you have those coping skills in place. And again, I totally agree, like, once, when there's something this massive going on, I feel the same. Like, I feel like, well, what can I do about that, so I don't really get anxious about that, because it's happening now, whereas I get anxious about the smaller day-to-day things as well.
Yeah, I definitely hope that all the years of therapy and all the meditation is paying off somehow. I was also on a retreat in the Amazon jungle over the new year, and that was very, very scary.
Wow.
I wonder if, having gone through that, I'm kind of a bit more chilled about this situation, because I've already been in a place where there's giant spiders and...
Oh my God. And what was that for? Was that like anything to do with like coping with anxiety, or did you just go off on adventure?
It was, yeah, partly adventure, partly my partner's really into like studying with shamans in the Amazon. And so I had the opportunity to go with him, and I was really not up for going and being in the middle of nowhere. Literally, you have to get on a little plane and fly for hours into the jungle. There's no roads. You can't get out.
So oh my God.
You can't get out. Lots of bugs and giant ants and spiders and that sort of thing. So it was a big test for me to...
Oh my God. So if you've survived that, you can survive this. No, you're in the lap of luxury. For me, the experience so far has really taught me about patience, because I think we live in a world that's so immediate, and we want solutions now. We want, you know, access to everything right away. And in lots of cases, we do have that, you know, stuff is just at the click of a button. But for me, I feel like I was already on the kind of isolation trend, because I was so sick with morning sickness, that I felt like I had like 12 weeks of that. And I was forced to learn patience so much. And when you're anxious, you just want it to be okay now. You don't want to be told it's going to take a while. And now, having come through the morning sickness, I'm still kind of in it, but which is terrible, at 20 weeks I thought I would definitely be over it. And then having to face this, it's just, I feel like this year is like, you have to learn to be patient. I think patience would be such a good skill for managing anxiety, that things take time. Especially, people always ask me, they DM me saying, oh, can you give me an idea of how long it will take for me to be able to be okay with my anxiety? And obviously that's just such a heartbreaking question, because it's how long is a piece of string, you know? But I think patience would be a skill that I need to work on for sure.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And I know that, well, I hope that we can be able to look at what we can learn from this situation, what we can learn about ourselves. And I think we're going to come out of this, all of us, stronger and more resilient, because we will have been through all these challenges. And on the other side, knowing that we can survive, knowing that we can adapt and change and learn about ourselves, I think it can hopefully bring us out stronger the other side.
Yeah, absolutely. I completely agree. So Chloe, I'd love to go back, for people who maybe aren't familiar, I'm sure they are, because your book is just an incredible resource, and we're probably quite similar in our stories, but could you take me back to the beginning of your experience with anxiety and what led you to the career that you have now? And
yeah, definitely. So I think, like a lot of people, I started feeling anxious as a teenager. I was at a friend's house, seemed like a normal day, and suddenly I was like swept away in this like tidal wave of panic, where I felt my chest tightening up, my heart was racing, I thought I was going to die. I was begging my friends to take me to hospital. And I think after that experience, I'd had a little taste of what it's like to really lose control. And it, you know, nothing had really, I'd had quite a sheltered life, sheltered upbringing, you know, nice family life. Nothing had really gone wrong for me at that point. And suddenly this thing had happened, and I just didn't feel normal after that. And I had, you know, very frequent panic attacks for the following kind of years after that. And it probably wasn't helped by, you know, drinking a lot of alcohol to try and feel more confident, to try and feel better about myself, and all the kind of physical effects that alcohol has that can really trigger anxiety. That definitely didn't help.
Did you ever get clarity? Did you ever get clarity on what brought that about for you? Like, I know for myself, it seemed like everything was fine on paper, but was there any sort of vulnerability factors at play there? Was it just the age that you were, where you were feeling maybe under a little bit of pressure? Well, how do you make sense of that now? Why it hit you then?
Yeah, it actually took me a long time to get to the root of things. I was probably about 26 or 27 when I really started to look into things. And I think before then, I just thought, oh, I'm an anxious person. I just didn't understand it at all. I didn't know what was happening, but I really didn't have any understanding of my own feelings. I didn't know what I was feeling. I just would feel confused, but not really know what was going on for me. I didn't know where things had come from. And looking back now, I can see, you know, very clearly that my mum was very anxious and quite emotionally volatile. And that I, as the oldest child of three, would take on the role of trying to make things okay.
Wow.
And taking on board the responsibility for how my mum was feeling and being on high alert, feeling like I had to walk on eggshells, being very afraid of what her emotional reaction would be, which I can see created, you know, a lot of low self-esteem and people pleasing and feeling like I needed to be perfect and needed to be on high alert. And that's not to say it was my mum's fault at all. I don't blame her at all. You know, she's absolutely doing her best and she's an amazing mom and a really beautiful person. But we all have our stuff and we can pass that on to our children inadvertently. And I think that's what happened. And yeah, it's taken me a long time to really understand that and understand my own feelings around that.
So you had what, about 10 years of experiencing anxiety without really understanding where it was coming from or why it was happening to you?
Yeah, absolutely.
That must have been so much more terrifying. I think I felt such an sense of urgency to understand it so that I could cope better, because when you're feeling anxiety and you don't know why, it's the anxiety becomes about the anxiety itself. So did you feel a lot of fear of the fear?
Yeah, that's an interesting way to describe it, isn't it? The fear of the fear. Yeah, definitely had a fear of having panic attacks. And I mean, my way of coping, I think, was I very much shut down about things. I was blocked. So a lot of people said I was like, I had like a brick wall up. I couldn't open up to people. I just kind of carried on without really dealing with things below the surface. And I just didn't. I know it sounds inconceivable now to me as someone that's so into personal development and looking at myself that I would be like that. But I was extremely blocked and didn't feel able to look at things or get help. I think I remember the first therapist that I went to see, it just didn't go well. The therapy session just didn't gel with her. I felt like she didn't understand me at all, and I just discounted therapy as not for me. Oh, how can that work? What do they know? And it was several years after that I actually gave it another go.
And what was the turning point then when you decided this is something I really want to address?
So I had had a lot of very bad romantic relationships where I just got treated like crap, basically. And I had gotten into a relationship that I'm still in now. My partner, Aiden, been together for 10 years, but at the beginning of our relationship, it was very challenging because what can often happen in relationships is that all your stuff comes to the surface and you finally have to look at yourself. It's often said that your partner's like your mirror. Suddenly you kind of have to confront all this stuff that, you know, I had been suppressing and not dealing with. And I think realizing that I was going to completely mess up this relationship unless I did something, and having it, so being so confronted with it, meant that I, you know, got some help. And, you know, I've probably seen about 10 different therapists at least in my life, you know, on and off over the years, and you know, made progress eventually. But it wasn't a quick journey. It did take some time and a lot of you know, challenges and feeling like I was stepping backwards and then moving forwards again. Yeah.
And what kind of therapy eventually convinced you that it was worth addressing? Was it just talking therapy? Was it CBT?
So I actually think it was a lot of different things. So I think talking therapy is really helpful for me because I had a lot of shame around how I was, what I was experiencing, and that had really stopped me from speaking out about things. And I think finally being witnessed and accepted and sharing all these things that I thought was so terrible about me by my therapist was really healing, and just being able to open up for the first time. So that was really powerful. Another thing that massively helped me was I was t- types of therapies that address the body. So I did things like shaking therapies, trauma release exercises. It's called TRE.
Okay.
Basically, it looks super weird, but you do some leg exercises to tire your leg muscles out. And then you kind of lie on the floor with your knees bent and your feet on the floor, and your body starts to shake. And it's this natural shaking that actually animals do in the wild to release trauma from the body. And people can, if you can Google TRE, if people are interested in that, but that really helped me. I think I'd stored a lot of tension in my body. It was really kind of at the root of things, and being able to release in terms of that. And also hypnotherapy, and that's, why I train as a hypnotherapist. I discovered hypnotherapy recordings and listened to them every day for several weeks, and found that that made a difference. I found I could relax more and I felt more confident.
Okay. And would you say hypnotherapy, would you say, is good for people for whom they know their anxiety is rooted to something in the past and they want to go back and address that then? Or do you think it's just quite a relaxing thing to do regardless of whether your anxiety is coming about now or whether it's from the past?
Yeah, I would say it definitely does help with dealing with things from the past and helping us to reframe situations. And I often do something with my clients where we go back to a situation in the past that maybe is at the root of the anxiety, and think about what you might say to yourself at that time, what they need to know, what you need to learn from that experience. But it's also really good for just training your unconscious mind to be more present, to be able to let go of things, to be kinder to yourself. So it doesn't necessarily have to be about dealing with the past. It can be okay. About just other tapping into other resources.
And if you were skeptical about therapy, were you skeptical about hypnotherapy?
I don't think I thought about it too much. I think I just was experimenting with recordings at that time. Okay. So I thought, oh, I'll give it a try. It didn't seem like it's not a big investment to listen to a recording. So I think I was just giving it a try. And actually, I was surprised that it worked. So I suppose I must have been skeptical if I was surprised. Yes, I was surprised.
Yeah. And can I ask you about the symptoms of anxiety, how it manifested for you? Because for some people, it's really very physical, where they don't necessarily have bad thoughts, but their chest is tight, their heart is racing, their jaw is tight. And then for some other people, or maybe it's a combination of both, it's just like thoughts that can go off like a bomb in their head and lead to more thoughts. And then that brings on this physical response. And for me, it was kind of a combination of everything. It was very physical, but it was very mental and emotional as well. So I couldn't not address it because I was physically unwell, like from the get-go when it really hit me. I wasn't sleeping, I wasn't eating properly, because I just everything just shut down. So what was it like for you?
Yeah, so I would say different in different situations. So I had panic attacks where I thought I was dying, and I've had experiences where I felt like I've come out of my body and watched myself from the ceiling, like a dissociation type of thing. Social anxiety, just getting very nervous when speaking to people, avoiding social situations, shaking so much that, can't pick up a glass or something when you're meeting someone. It's very embarrassing. I've had periods of health anxiety, kind of focusing on different symptoms, obsessively worrying about things, generally just feeling nervous, IBS, all sorts of things.
The whole shebang.
Yes. Glorious.
Oh, God.
Ways that it can manifest.
And how are you these days?
So I'm definitely a much calmer person these days. And I have to say, I work quite hard at staying calm. I make meditation a big part of my life. I try to design my life so that I'm not putting myself under too much pressure.
Yeah.
But there are definitely times when I might feel anxious or overwhelmed, or stressed, but I haven't had a panic attack in a long time, thankfully. A lot of the things around social anxiety don't hold me back anymore. So I might get a bit nervous if I'm speaking in public, but it doesn't stop me from doing it.
You understand it.
It used to ruin like 3 weeks of my life before kind of public speaking, and now I might get nervous a few minutes before, but it's not such a big deal. So
I think it's also important to say that I know when I was sort of on the road out of really crippling anxiety, getting towards the point of owning it, which is the wording I use, I would have measured my success based on, okay, I haven't had a panic attack in 3 weeks. And I thought that was so much pressure. Like, retrospectively, I realized that I was getting afraid of, well, if I have one, that means I've gone backwards, or that means that everything I've learned is gone and I'm back to square one. Do you look at your anxiety now and think, well, I could have a panic attack and that's okay and I could handle it, and you just happen to not have had one because you're not afraid of it? Or do you look over your shoulder wondering, what if it gets me again?
That's such an interesting one. And actually, I hear that a lot from people about beating themselves up about taking a step back. And actually, it's such a common thing that therapists say, that progress isn't linear, that we do have these ups and downs, and we never really take a step back because we're always learning, and that understanding of ourselves and how we are will remain with us even if it feels like we take a step back.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
I feel, and I don't know, this is not a scientific feeling, but for myself, I feel like something in my nervous system has calmed down, almost as if I feel like something happened when I had that first panic attack. I don't think this is very scientific, but something happened and my nervous system has recovered from that, almost like a traumatic event that happened. And I don't feel like I would have a panic attack now because I'm not scared of it happening. I know how to ride that wave, I think. If I do feel a lot of fear in my body, like in the Amazon jungle, there were times when I felt a lot of fear, but I know how to ride that way, or maybe it's owning it in the way you describe it. I don't feel like I'm gonna have another panic attack, but who knows, we'll see.
But you, like, I mean, I only had one a couple of weeks ago, and I think it was the first time I'd experienced one in such a long time. No one else would have noticed I was having one. My stress response was just triggered by the environment that I was in. One of my first times going out after having been so sick for so long with my morning sickness, and we went to a gig, and it was also just at the beginning of the coronavirus thing, so I think I was becoming a little bit too aware of, like, I don't know if we should be in this sort of crowded environment. I just felt physically uncomfortable, and I started to just feel like, oh, like, I think I also had a lot of Coca-Cola so the caffeine just was kind of just like adding to the stimulation, and I started to just feel like I don't really want to be here, and if I can't leave, then I feel trapped. And someone was having a conversation with me, you know, perfectly lovely person, and I just was like, I need to leave. And I think a couple of years ago, I would have left that situation and been like, oh my God, what does this mean? What is wrong with you? Like, I thought you'd come so far, you know, how come you're getting scared in an environment like that? But it was the first time that I was like, okay, hold on a minute, I know enough now at this stage to know that was like a bit of a perfect storm of, you know, like, same as, okay, not the same, but you could understand in the Amazon jungle, well, of course I feel afraid right now. I feel threatened. I feel like my comforts are threatened. For me, there was too many people around me. Maybe I felt subconsciously like a bit aware of my pregnancy, my bump, and trying to protect that. And I just went for the compassionate route of just saying, that didn't work for you. You did what you did, could get yourself out of that situation. And you haven't gone backwards. You've just had a reaction to a stressful experience, which we're always going to have, you know, like, you don't get to a point of owning anxiety or feeling like you've solved it, and then never, your stress response doesn't just shut down for the rest of your life. It's always going to be challenged. And I think that's the hardest thing for people to wrap their head around when they first start to really suffer, because they just want so much to cure it.
Yeah, I think that's such an important point, that we're always changing all the time, and we're going to have ups and downs. And I think we love, as human beings, have this idea that we can just tick a box and just not have to think about that thing anymore. But we're always evolving and changing, and so things are going to go up and down.
And then, like me, you have also kind of made this your whole career as well. And a lot of people ask me if writing about anxiety and talking about it and helping other people with anxiety triggers your own anxiety. But for me, it doesn't really, because if I am helping other people, I'm still helping myself, because I'm still talking about it and normalizing it for myself. So would you feel the same?
Yeah. I obviously see clients one-on-one who are telling me about their anxiety every day.
That's tough. I would find that hard.
Yeah, I actually don't, for some reason. I think because I feel as though I can help people and we can move forward, it feels quite progressive. I think maybe if it was a different type of therapy, maybe counselling, where there's a lot of talking about things and going over them, maybe that would be harder. But I think with hypnotherapy, it's quite focused on the future and how you want things to be.
And it's practical and you're proactive. And I think for me, anything that made me feel like I was doing something and not just circling around it all the time made me feel like I already had a bit of power and control over my situation. So what were you doing before this all became your career?
So I worked in the NHS as a nutritionist. Wow. So I used to do cooking classes with children and parents. I lived in Essex, and I studied nutrition at university, but got a bit disillusioned with, I think, how long it took to change things in the NHS and kind of I wanted more control, basically. I knew I wanted to work for myself. Bit of a control freak, so wanted to work for myself, and then discovered hypnotherapy and got into that and realized how often the psychological aspect of things was relating to what people were eating. That was kind of the beginning of it, and then I just got more and more interested in stress and trauma and the root of where things come from as I was learning about myself.
And the book, The Anxiety Solution, how did that come about?
So I was very fortunate in that someone that I'd met about twice introduced me to a book agent who asked me if I wanted to write a book. And I was just noticing that I was seeing clients who were telling me the same things every single week, that they didn't feel good enough, that they were perfectionists, they were putting pressure on themselves, they would compare themselves to other people. And I suppose I wanted to write a book that was addressing a lot of these things that young women experienced, you know, particularly, and write it in a way that was really about my experiences and the experiences of my clients, and something that is very practical. And there are a lot of tools in the anxiety solution that people can, you know, choose what works for them.
And that's exactly the right way to say it, because the same as my book, you know, you can't just say, look, this is going to work for you, take what you want from it and leave the rest. Some people will identify with some aspects of it, they might not identify with others, but really it is like whatever works for you. So, and is there one overall solution that anchors the book, or is it more like smaller solutions throughout?
Yeah, so I was a bit uncomfortable with the title, The Anxiety Solution, because it almost makes it seem like there's this cure. But I think it is clear in the book that it's not really about that. It's about listening to yourself, listening to your anxiety and what it might be trying to teach you. You know, is it trying to help you to make a change in your life or heal something from the past or learn something about yourself? And then looking at ways to put different tools into your life, self-care, working on your self-esteem and your self-worth, and, you know, a holistic approach of lots of different things, everything from what you're eating to how you speak to yourself and how you use social media. It is a bit of a buffet of different tools that people can choose from, what works for them.
I love that. And is there anything that you think people generally, from speaking with clients every day, do you think people get anything wrong with anxiety? Are we being completely disillusioned by anything?
Yeah. So What I'm hearing a lot at the moment is about how people are really giving themselves a hard time about how they're feeling. So, for example, people beating themselves up about not handling this crisis better, or telling themselves they should be stronger, they should be not feeling anxious, not feeling down. And I think in terms of, you know, how we feel, we feel how we feel. We can't really, you know, beating ourselves up about that doesn't help. It makes it 10 times worse. And so I think just being kind to ourselves about how we're feeling is something that we can all be doing. And it just takes a layer of that pressure off, because particularly now, you know, we've never experienced anything like this before. And, you know, you just feel what you feel. And it's not good or bad. We shouldn't make ourselves wrong for that.
Yeah, the self-compassion thing is something that I'm getting increasingly more interested in as, I guess, as a solution, as an overall solution to so many of our problems. And I think, especially in this current situation, you know, the world is under threat. All this is going on. We're dealing with something we've never dealt with before. Yet at the same time, we're so hard on ourselves, thinking, I should be so productive. I should be doing this. I should be using every minute of my time. And I think it's just highlighting for me how little self-compassion we have. And actually, something that I only learned recently about self-compassion was that we think, we assume that by being critical or hard on ourselves, that it's going to be more motivating, more self-motivating. And actually, it stimulates cortisol production. So it keeps you on that treadmill of stress and anxiety. And it's, I don't know if it's a British thing, but it's definitely an Irish thing, where it's like, oh, just get on with it, you know. I guess people say stiff upper lip is a British thing as well. Whereas when you choose a more self-compassionate route, you're kinder to yourself, and you say, okay, you know, it's okay that you feel this way, or what, how can I help, rather than you shouldn't be feeling this way. You actually like down-regulate that stress response, and you bring down that cortisol, and you actually bring in more of the nicer hormones. And I was interviewing a neuroscientist for the series a while ago, and he just said the phrase to me, if self-compassion was a pill, we'd each take it every single day. And it just really stuck with me, because it's not just like a nice idea of like, oh, just be kind to each other and be kind to yourself. Like, actually, if you look at a brain of someone who's compassionate versus someone who's really hard on themselves, we're making ourselves so much worse. So if we can just know that tiny little nugget of information, I think it's a game changer.
Totally. And I think we can't hear that enough. It's almost, I don't know, for me, I think we hear it quite a lot of just be kind to yourself. But actually, I think we continually need that reminder, because it's so easy to slip back into, you know, negative patterns of giving yourself a hard time, just continuing to affirm to yourself that it's okay to be nice to
absolutely.
Yourself.
Absolutely. So if you could go back now in time, as maybe in a hypnotherapy session with yourself, and tell teenage Chloe something that maybe would make her experience a little bit easier, what would it be?
So I think for me, it would be just saying, you're okay. You know, you're not uniquely flawed and broken. There is not something wrong with you. You're okay as you are. You know, looking back, I can really see it was this sense of shame, of being good enough, of not feeling that, yeah, being me was okay. And I think if I could just give that message to her, which I have done in lots of self-hypnosis sessions, then that would be really, really helpful. Yeah.
And for anyone listening who has resonated with what you said about your experience of social anxiety, do you have anything that you sort of tell yourself now whenever you're going to be in a situation where maybe you'd be likely to feel anxious in a social environment? Do you have a go-to or a coping mechanism specifically for that?
Yeah, I was talking to someone about this earlier today. I used to be completely terrified of any kind of networking event or party where I didn't know people. And my boyfriend works in sales, and he's very confident. And he said to me, Chloe, you just got to go up to people and say, hello, my name is Chloe. So now I make a point of, if any situation I have to go into to speak to people, I just decide to myself, I'm going to go up to the first person I see and say, hello, my name is Chloe. And that is the beginning of any conversation. And you don't need to worry about what will happen after that, because the conversation will flow. They'll introduce themselves to you. You can ask them another question. But for me, knowing that I could do that, I think was quite empowering, just to be able to get past that block that I had of oh, what do I do? How do I, you know, start conversations? You know, thankfully these days I'm a lot more confident in those, in those sorts of situations. But yeah, hello, my name is. That's my.
Wow, and it's so simple, but it seems so terrifying. Like, I'm listening to you say that way, thinking, wow, she is so brave. But it's really, I mean, it's something that it seems so obvious and simple, but actually getting the courage to do that is, it's not easy, you know, so it takes a while. I think if someone was going to follow that advice, you know, it's about repetition and practice. You know, you're not just going to walk up to someone and say, hi, my name is Chloe. Well, if that's your name, and suddenly be just so fluent and conversational, you know, it's going to take a while. And it's kind of exposure to social situations as well, which I think we are probably in a way being starved of now because of what's going on. And if I was to have any worries about, you know, obviously we're all having a lot of anxiety about being cut off socially right now. But I think I'm a bit thinking myself when we're back out in the world, which hopefully we will be by the time we're listening, I think I'll have to be very mindful of feeling anxious around people again, because we've been so conditioned to stay away, that I think that's going to be the next hurdle to overcome. And it's not something I want to, you know, dwell on or worry about now, but that, you know, if you do find yourself in a situation where you're like in a nightclub or a gig situation and you're feeling, oh, like this is so unusual after what we've been through, like, again, to choose the compassionate route of, well, you haven't been in this situation for so long. You've been told it's not a good thing to do. And we have to try and gently, you know, undo all that thinking and start embracing society again, which it's going to be a challenge for everyone, I think.
Definitely, yeah. I spoke to a few friends who've been saying that going to the supermarket now, even though they're not even that anxious, going to the supermarket now seems like a daunting thing. So
yeah,
I think we need to try to stay engaged with each other as much as possible, connect with people on video chats, and try to keep that social engagement going so that it's not such a big shock when we do, you know, get to go out into the world again.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you look back at maybe the last 10 years of your life, and from when you were a teenager to discovering where it all came from in your 20s to now, you know, it being your profession, what are you most proud of with everything that you've learned yourself?
Yeah, so I think if I'd looked back, you know, even 10 years or something at what I'm doing now and what I'm able to do, I don't think I would have believed it. So I feel like I've come a long way. And I think starting the podcast was a big thing for me. Even I started it 2 years ago, but part of it for me was wanting to be more confident at speaking. And I thought, what better way to do that than to get so much practice and have conversations with interesting people. So yeah, I feel proud of having done that and, you know, putting that out into the world. And I think it is good to look back and give ourselves credit for how far we've come.
Yeah.
We don't do that enough. And yeah, it's definitely something that I try to do and reflect on.
Absolutely. I mean, I wrote about this in my second book, that we're all striving for success and striving to get to these points where, you know, we've overcome something, and then we get there and we don't know what to do with the success or whatever, you know, that measure of having achieved something. And straight away we just belittle it and we're on to the next thing. And what's the point if you can't take stock every now and then and think, you know, where, look how far you've come relative to your experience. Like, even for me, every now and then I have to remind myself that there was a time when my anxiety was so bad that I couldn't have been in a coffee shop at all. You know, I couldn't have met a friend for coffee. And while for someone else it might seem like, what, that is so not a big deal, for me to have been in that position and then now find myself in situations where I'm giving a talk in front of hundreds of people, like, that, if I don't take a moment to be proud of that, I'll never appreciate it. You know, what's the point in just always being on to the next thing, you know?
Totally. And we're all on our own path, and so we shouldn't compare ourselves with what's possible for one person and what's possible for us. You know, compare yourself with yourself and the progress that you're making.
Yeah. And can I ask you, before I let you go, what are you working on now? Is there any new books perhaps in the pipeline?
Yeah, so I hopefully am writing another book. And I'm just trying to decide on the direction that it's going to go. It has changed a couple of times, but we'll see. But yeah, I'm excited to get back into that
Well, Chloe, I'm so excited to see what you do next. You have just been such a source of inspiration on social media, particularly for me, and I know for lots of people who follow me who also follow you have recommended you so many times. And I love your approach to anxiety. I think we have a very similar kind but educational and knowledge first approach to understanding what we're dealing with. And I wish you all the luck in the world, and thank you so much for joining me on Owning It, the Anxiety Podcast.
Thank you so much. Great to chat with you.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
The easiest way to access Owning It Real Time is to head to the link in the episode description or episode details, whatever you call them, show notes. You will find the link in there at the top. You can sign up right away for Owning It Real Time and access the full library of 10 situation-specific audio guides that will help you own your anxiety even more than you've ever done before.